Geek Bill Radio.
You could not live with your own failure. Where did that bring you? Back to me.
Welcome once again, all geeks and geekettes. This is Seth, a.k.a. Xandrax, the mayor of Geekville, and the host of Geekville Radio. And, well, alas, it has finally come. The moment that many of us have been waiting for since we were kind of smacked across the face with the ending of Infinity War. Avengers Endgame is finally out. We've seen it, and obviously we are going to spoil the heck out of this. So if you want a spoiler-free review, other than it's really good and go see it, we're not really going to provide that. I might as well just get the spoiler warning out of the way right away.
Spoiler alert. Spoiler alert. Spoiler hull has been breached. Spoiler hull has been breached.
And of course, joining me on this little excursion into Geekville Radio is my good friend and regular podcast co-host, Crazy Train Jonathan Bullock.
All aboard, ladies and gentlemen. 11 years in, and we finally get the payoff. Wow, that's like any wrestling angle times 5,000, I guess, you know?
Right.
As far as time goes.
I was actually going to say that, you know, I try to keep the wrestling lingo to a minimum here in Geekville, but in a pro wrestling sense, Infinity War was all about getting heat on Thanos, you know, making you hate Thanos so that when the baby faces or heroes in this case make their comeback, it means that much more. And that's pretty much what it was. They spent one movie to get all that heat in the bad guy, and then they spent the second movie with the heroes fighting back.
Yeah, they spent like 21 movies before that, essentially introducing all the baby faces. Mm-hmm. And then one movie getting heat on the... Well, they were subtly trying to get a little bitty. I guess to use the wrestling comparison, you could say the first 21 movies or so were like introductory vignettes of all the baby faces. With small little vignettes of the heel to come, then one movie getting heat on the heel, and then the blow off was this.
Right. So I guess we'll go with some of the talking points that I had. I got about 3, 4, maybe 5 things that we could talk about, in no particular order. What we got right about the film, and obviously what we got wrong as far as our predictions went. What kind of changes were made in the MCU? You know, what is a little different now, and maybe like, how do I put it? An outlook for the future. How could they make future films? And I also got a couple of examples of where this deviated from the Infinity Gauntlet miniseries, you know, where the whole concept came from.
Right.
But, you know, I'll get those out of the way because the two big ones are, you know, as I had said, in one of my posts on Facebook, that the part of Adam Warlock could be played by Captain Marvel. I put that in the review I had on War of the Realms. You know, I said, you know, when I go to see Avengers, this is what my predictions were. And we didn't get that in the comics, because in the comics, Adam Warlock is the person that wrests the gauntlet away and uses the stones to undo it, everything. Actually, Nebula did it first.
Yep.
And she was also a different state in there. She was essentially a living corpse. And she, to get her revenge on Thanos, essentially using the power against him. And he says, well, if you're going to do this, you might as well undo all the damage. You know, go back in time 2 days.
Right.
Which she did, which turned her back to a corpse, which got the Infinity Gauntlet back on Thanos. And that's about the time Warlock came in and grabbed the gems. That's really the biggest difference. And I've been only half joking, really, to my friends, that this is one of the few cases where the explanation in the movie is actually far more complicated than the explanation in the comics. You know, because in the comics it was just we'll go get the gems, and there wasn't any time travel. You know, maybe there was in later issues, but the original Infinity Gauntlet that I had, there was no time travel involved. They just confronted
it. No,
yeah.
Matter of fact, I kind of told everybody as far as that part of the comics versus the movies go, essentially what happened in Infinity War happened in the comics. It just happened in reverse order. And what I mean by that is the comic series starts with Thanos snapping his fingers.
Mm-hmm.
And then kind of ends with the resolution. This one, it's a build up. Then he snaps his fingers, you know? So am I wrong? I mean, 5-6 pages into the comic when he snaps his fingers.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause in the comics, he's trying to appease death. Death is the form of a woman, and somehow he's in love with death. And
yeah, we've gone over how that's a very convoluted, deep story. And we see as comic geeks, in an attempt to tell a story that is more digestible by the masses, they veered away from that and went with another motivation for him, you know?
Right. And really, the way Thanos got the gauntlet in the comics, I mean, maybe I missed some issues, but he just shows up in Silver Surfer with it. So, it, you know, it's like he had faked his death. I remember that much, but I don't think there was a in-depth storyline about him acquiring them. He just showed up with them. And I think they probably, they meaning Marvel and Kevin Feige and all them, probably thought there'd be great stories to tell about Thanos getting each stone, which is, of course, part of the subplots of most of the Phase 1 and Phase 2 movies.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's the big differences in the comics there. As far, like I said, it was pretty straightforward in the comics. They had a lot of fun getting to that point in the movies. So I guess we'll start next with predictions that we got right. I think we both predicted that Gamora would somehow be alive by the end of this movie, whether she would be brought back via Infinity Gems or through some sort of paradox. You know, that mm-hmm. I think we both said that we're probably going to see Gamora get out of this, right?
Right, right. Which I'm not 100% sure they. I mean, here's the thing: since we've already waived the spoiler tag, we all know the very, very ending. So, you know, at the very ending at Tony's funeral there at his lake house, they have each little group together. You know, they have the original Avengers and his family up front. And then they've got like the Ant-Man Wasp people in one little group, you know, and the Captain America people in a group and the magic people in a group. When they go to the group that is the Guardian, she's not with that group. It's just Quill, Mantis, Drax, Rocket, and Groot. So I don't know, but there is the scene earlier where she sees Peter knocked out, the, you know, the 2014 version of Gamora, and looks at the current version of Nebula and says, "This was him." Yeah, I told you he's kind of an idiot. That, which was, you know, one of the comedic beats of the movie. So I'm a guess. We're assuming that she. But here's my problem with that. It brings up an interesting thing. I don't know if you've caught this. So Nebula from our time shoots Nebula from 2014, who is still loyal to Thanos at this point, and kills her. Doesn't that mean she should fade out because she killed her past self, which means the current one would never have existed?
I think that's what they were trying to explain in the first act of the film, where Hulk is talking about, like, you change the past, it doesn't change that future or your future. You know, it's
another comedic beat where Paul Rudd says, or Ant-Man says, "You mean Back to the Future lied to us?" That
right,
one,
right? Right. I mean, they've done similar things in Trek before, but I forget the exact episodes. But I used to make the joke about the theory of multiple realities, where essentially, like, every decision somebody makes triggers another alternate reality. Like, whether you had a hot dog for lunch or a burrito for lunch, somehow that would trigger another alternate reality in existence.
the old butterfly effect, you mean, right?
Right, exactly. So I think that's what they meant. Essentially, while both Nebulas were the same person, one was displaced in time or had kind of deviated from that timeline. So that's how she was able to kill her younger self and not die herself.
Right. Okay. Well, that was one of my, I was like, wait a second, maybe I'm still stuck in the Back to the Future thing, you know?
Right.
I don't know. It's time travel. It's sci-fi mumbo jumbo. Just accept it for what it is. Right.
Right. Now, I forget if we agreed on this prediction or not, but I think we were both thinking, at least independently, and that's that we would have a new Captain America by the time this was over, whether Cap died or whether he just passed on the shield. It was,
or
I think,
retired.
Right.
You know.
It was just a matter of Bucky or Falcon. You know, those would probably be the only two people that Cap would trust that far. So,
quite frankly, I thought he was either going to die or that he was just going to, after the battle was over, was going to retire. And he did. I didn't see the aging process, which I liked.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I kept saying, as soon as I saw the old man, the first thing out of my mouth was, he finally made that date for that dance, which, of course, we find out 5 minutes later is true. That's how they end the movie, of course, is him and Peggy dancing, which I liked, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And not just because I like Haley Atwell. I just thought it was good storytelling, you know.
The hero finally got that happy ending, so to speak.
Right, right. And we've said all along that chronologically speaking, even though it was the third movie released, Captain America First Avenger was the first movie chronologically. That really what kicked it all off.
Right.
You know, so.
Right.
So, you know, that's fine. But, you know, I think that was one thing we were definitely right, was that he was going to pass the shield on. And it made sense it was going to be Sam or Bucky because, well, they both have had that mantle and that title in the comics.
Agreed. And I think we did also agree that Nebula in some capacity would help Tony out, which mm-hmm. I don't know if she was doing that by putting him in the cockpit or if she was just trying to get him comfortable. But there were also people who were thinking that Captain Marvel would be the one that saves him, which is probably more so the case ever mm-hmm. since they showed that she could survive in space and go to other planets and such. Right. That seemed to be a logical one as well.
Well, Tony even said in one of his recorded messages to Pepper, you know, that the reason he wasn't dead from infection was because Nebula had saved him, you know.
Right.
And then they did a close-up of the wound on his side, which, of course,
yes, is where he right. got, okay.
that's where he got stabbed by Thanos in Infinity War. And as he was dying, when Strange made the deal with Thanos, let him live, and I'll give you the stone, you know. So, yeah. I mean, I think she did. I think a lot of people, because of the way they edited together the trailers we got, they knew that Nebula and how the last movie ended, that Nebula and Tony were together on, that's not the Milano anymore. I can't remember the name of the ship, whatever it is. But the Guardian ship.
Right.
Because the Milano got destroyed. Everybody said, oh, that's the Milano. I'm like, no, the Milano got destroyed. Go back and watch the movies. It's another ship. It's just the same kind of ship. But anyway, you know, so we knew that, but we didn't know what exactly was going to be their dynamic. And we got a little bit of that, you know, right at the beginning of the movie. So that's fine.
And we were correct in our prediction. And I think really anybody that knows the comics to an extent is that reveal of Hawkeye in the trailer. We figured, okay, he's Ronan now. And that's exactly right. What happened. You know,
and we even speculated that he would turn that dark because his family got dusted, which we saw right at the beginning of the movie.
Right. So. You know, literally the very first scenes in the movie, there wasn't any Disney Presents or Marvel Presents or whatever about a production. It just went right in where
you're right on the right on the Barton's farm having a picnic for right. supper, and he right. turns around and there's dust and no to his family. So
yeah, I was kind of thinking, you know, if I hadn't got in time, you know, missed the previews or something like that, if I could have walked in like right at that first frame and think I've missed mm-hmm. a few minutes. You know, just for that exact same reason.
They immediately quelled the suspicion of a lot of speculators online with the scenes from the trailers where we see Hawkeye training a young female how to shoot a bow. That isn't Kate Bishop. That was his daughter. You mm-hmm. know, there was a lot of that, you know, oh, they're going to create a new Hawkeye. They're going to have Kate Bishop like in the comics. No. We did not see that. That is not wrong. and I would not be shocked if they put that in the trailers just to troll people on that very thing. That's just the way I think they do some of these trailers nowadays. I'm just saying.
Yeah, I think they even said, they meaning the Russo brothers, I think they had even said that there were scenes in that trailer that did not make it to the movie, and they just left them in to kind of keep people guessing. So, and I'm perfectly fine with that, really.
You did catch Joe Russo's cameo, didn't you?
Was he the one that was talking to Cap after Cap became the counselor?
Yeah, when Cap was obviously running that support group for the people that had survived the snap, he was the guy with glasses and curly dark hair. That's mm-hmm. Joe Russo, one of the directors.
Yeah, it makes sense.
So he did the Alfred Hitchcock and put himself in his own movie. You know, Hitchcock was probably the first director to do that a lot, but others have done it since him. Mm-hmm. Most of them because they were fans of Alfred Hitchcock. But mm-hmm. there's a lot of directors going today that were inspired by Alfred Hitchcock, so not a surprise, you know.
Yeah, it makes sense. And the last prediction that I had written down, I don't know if you have any others, but I think we had talked about one of the big three dying, meaning Iron Man, Thor, or a Cap. And in this mm-hmm. case, it was Iron Man. And I wouldn't have been surprised if they killed more than one, but I think the ending was perfect for Cap and Tony, who essentially has been the central character. If you have one, if you want to give one for all these 20-some movies, he really was the one that was probably the most centric. Out of them,
sure. Yeah. I mean, even if it wasn't him, you go back to the ones earlier, at least as far as chronologically speaking, and it was Howard. It was his father. A Stark has been very important, essentially. You know, and I think if you understand the Marvel Universe on the comic side, the Stark family has always kind of represented a certain aspect of the earthbound science inspired side of the Marvel Universe. There is, you know, like even if you like look at the Marvel Illuminati, that's what that is, the role that Tony fills on that in that group. You know, not saying that Reed's not smart, not saying that T'Challa's not smart, not saying Strange isn't smart, but that is what Tony represents on that council, that cabal, that group, you know? So right. It makes sense because he's pretty much Stark has pretty much had the same role in the movie. I mean, because is there any other character that is other than Captain America that's had a thread through all of this? None. In fact, there is no Captain America without a Stark because Howard helped Erskine create Captain America.
Right. You know? And the shield. Yeah.
So, I mean, he really is the core of everything. He is the foundation, if you think about it. Not Tony, per se, but the Stark family, you know. So,
right.
And we did also, once again, to pat ourselves on the back, we said we thought one of them was going to die, and we also said they were going to get their hero moment in doing it, which they did, you know. We got to circle all the way back around to the very end of the very first movie, I Am Iron Man, you know. So.
Right.
Well, another one, too, to stay in the Iron Man family. I think we both said there was a high likelihood we would see Rescue in this. Mm-hmm. You know, Pepper in her own armor, and we did.
Mm-hmm. I think I'd even floated the idea of Pepper being the one to help save him in the armor. That didn't come true, but I don't think I made that as a specific prediction. I think it was more like, this is what I would do if I were mm-hmm. writing it.
It was one of those, if it happens, I won't be shocked kind of things.
Right, exactly. So let's move on from predictions we got right to predictions that we got wrong. Like I said at the top of the show, and I think we talked about it in pre-show, obviously there was no Adam Warlock, and Adam Warlock is a central figure in the Infinity Gauntlet comic series back in the day, who was effectively Thanos' brother. And he is the one that ultimately uses the gems to undo the damage and put everything back the way it was. And obviously, Adam Warlock didn't do it in the movie. I had predicted that it would be Captain Marvel that does it because, you know, it makes sense. She's kind of the maybe most popular of the newcomers, if you want to call it that. I know we did a whole show about her, but I actually figured it was going to be Carol that was going to lower the boom on Thanos and undo all that. And she tried. She just failed. And then that's when Iron Man stepped in and did what he did, you know, the self-sacrifice and such. So,
well, I mean, I thought it showed short-sightedness on Carol's part. Obviously, she didn't know this, but she had to have an inkling. Your solution to taking on this near indestructible force is to just punch him. Don't you think with the Hulk, we've already tried that? Oh, yeah, we did. And the same result happened.
Right.
You know? And for the same reason, because he had the power stone both times when he beat the crap out of Hulk and when he beat the crap out of you. So, you know, no offense to Carol. It's just like, dude, we had the Hulk and Thor. They've tried this already. It didn't work. All right.
It's basically what Rhodey told her.
Yeah, it's like, Rhodey's like, you know, path of least resistance here.
right. Probably the biggest thing that I got wrong, and it's something I was hinting at with Doctor Strange, that instead of Adam Warlock being the one in Soul World, essentially inside the Soul Gem to rally the troops, Doctor Strange was my prediction to do that. And maybe he did. It was just off screen because Peter, you know, Spider-Man actually does mention, oh, man, you know, Doctor Strange told me we have to go. So it sounds like he did do that. But there just wasn't any Soul World depicted. It seems like the people that got snapped were just gone, period, not stuck in the Soul Gem.
Right. Well, I mean, how did Peter describe it? I mean, he described it as like, and then I got dusty, and then and it was like, boom, and there was Doctor Strange grabbing me.
Right. That is one thing. I don't want to get off on a tangent on this because I think it's something that could at least somewhat be easily explained. When Tony and Hulk did what they did with the stones, they said that they wouldn't change the last 5 years. So does that mean the people that were brought back, are they going to have those 5 years in memory? Or is it something where they arranged it in a way where maybe they thought they blinked and then just continued life as usual? I think that might have been what they were trying for. Yeah.
I think more the latter, simply because of the way Scott explained what happened to him in the quantum realm, you know?
Mm-hmm.
When he's like, you know, it was 5 years for you guys, but it was like I walked around for 5 hours and here I am. So isn't that how he described it?
Something like, yeah. I mean, he talked about it was 5 minutes for him or 5 hours and then it was 5 years. So I don't know if that means that half the population now, like, suddenly lost 5 years of their life. I don't know if they're detailing that. I just kind of figured maybe they would do it for the sake of people being there. And I'll get to that a little bit later when we start talking about the future, because I think it was a way they might be able to work in more Avengers movies. But in the end, it's only a movie. If that's their explanation, that people just suddenly missed 5 years of their life, I mean,
right.
Worse things have happened.
Quite frankly, the whole time jump 5 years forward surprised me in general, you know?
Yeah, it did me too.
It's fine. I had speculated that maybe the somehow Scott had passed, had traveled way back into the past, and that was the video that they saw at the front door. I was wrong, but there was still a time jump there. You know, I wasn't wrong about that. Mm-hmm. It's just like, you know, like I said, Scott even said himself, it seemed like 5 years to everybody here on Earth, but to him, he'd only been gone for a few hours, you know, mm-hmm. So, which also is a nice way to explain why Paul Rudd didn't age 5 years. Right.
Right.
So,
of course, he hasn't aged in like the last 20 years. So I guess that part was easy.
That's another thing for another day. You know, we got to see more of the magical de-aging too. Speaking of time passing, we got our last Stan Lee cameo, and it was a de-aged 1970s Stan, say, you know, being a hippie, make love, not war. We got to see a de-aged John Slattery as a young sideburned Howard Stark. Those scenes were great to me, by the way.
Mm-hmm. And how about the Michael Douglas cameo where, you know, he's got the long, bushy hair? Yeah.
Or they did the opposite with Haley Atwell. They didn't age her as far as they had in the beginning of the first Ant-Man, but they aged her from what we know her as. Because, you know, Peggy in 1970 would be, you know, your 1970 is you know, like 25 years from the end of chronologically speaking, of First Avenger. Well, she's what at the end of the First Avenger? 28, maybe? 20, 30?
Right. Yeah, so, mid-20s or so, yeah.
So she's in her late 40s, early 50s in that scene, and they aged her to that. Of course, when we see her in 80, what is it, 88, 89, at the beginning of Ant-Man, she's got to be in her, you know, mid to late 60s. And then, of course, when we see her at, you know, in the Captain America movie, she's in her 90s. She's 90-something when she died in Captain America 3, wasn't she?
Yeah, sounds about right. I had tried doing the math. I had seen stuff about Cap being born in 1923, but I think that was an older comic. According to the MCU, I believe he was born in 1918 on July 4th. You know, what better birthday for Captain America than,
right,
you know, July
right.
4th?
I did not think there was as much comedy in this one, but what comedy was there was is it just me, or did the take they did on the very, very depressed Thor, the Thor that let himself go to pot Thor, didn't he look like Thor meets the dude from Big Lebowski and right. with the long beard and the you know, the house coat and everything, and you're going, you've really let yourself go, Thor.
Yeah, I thought Potbelly Thor was hysterical.
Well, what even made it better is he still had these huge guns for arms. You know, he had these 24-inch pythons, as Hogan would say, but with a beer belly that would make any middle-aged dad in America proud, right?
Right, right.
I was like, wow, that was so funny. And I think in light of all that, we can't really avoid this, but we've done like three whole episodes on it. In light of some of the people online being upset with the direction they thought that the Marvel universe was going with the marketing of Captain Marvel and the whole movie itself, I think that the new characters in particular, or in general, but the female characters in particular, they really were not super duper heavily involved with this movie. It was what we predicted, which was going to be the OGs, going to be the original Avengers, and it was. Except for, like, you know, Rhodey, Rocket, and Nebula, which we all knew because they all had survived. They were going to be the only ones that were in Scott. We're only the ones going to be really involved. And they were, and we were right. And there was the one scene that was obviously, I think, to placate the ladies or people of that mindset where Okoye says she won't be alone, and it's this big group shot of all the female hero characters. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's cute, that's quaint. I didn't like it, only because it felt forced. You know, it's like, I go back to what we said in the Captain Marvel episodes when we reviewed that movie. If you've been reading the comics, you know all these characters they showed have been kick-ass heroes for years. Welcome to the party, you know? Mm-hmm. Just putting them all together in a group shot almost seem like pandering to me by Marvel. It's like, you've been presenting these as strong characters for years, so just for the people who don't know that, let's put them all together in a group shot and show them how pro girl power we are. I was like, oh, come on, you know?
Right, right.
But I mean, if you got to do that to satisfy some of the people who don't read the comics, it's what you got to do, I guess. I don't know, you know? Yeah.
So I did think that it was very fitting, yeah, heading into the third act, essentially, where they finally get to confront Thanos. I thought it was very fitting that it was the big three, you know, the original three,
right,
mainstays of the Avengers that took part in that fight.
Right, right. Is anyone shocked, especially in light of them laying this, you know, putting this breadcrumb out there, that Cap is able to wield Mjolnir?
Oh, no. It didn't surprise me at all, because it has been depicted in the comics before.
Right, now, right.
The first time he did it, it was, I think, to give it back to Thor. It was like Thor had dropped it, and
right,
Cap they essentially tossed it back to him. Yeah,
they did that. They gave that to Vision in Age of Ultron. You know, so kind of shocked that they didn't bring Vision back. I don't know what Paul Bettany's contractual obligations are, if he'd already fulfilled them or not with Infinity War. But I still think, and this is my opinion, and I've heard rumors bandied about for a long time, that they do want to go this route. I do think at some point, from Marvel's going forward, they're going to introduce the Wonder Man, Simon Williams character. That is definitely okay. A way you could bring Vision back into the fold. Don't you agree?
Yeah, totally makes sense.
Because if those of you that don't read comics, and I doubt there's many of our listeners that don't, but if you don't, Wonder Man is essentially Superman-like powers minus flight, who becomes an important Avenger, and he is a creation of Hank Pym's in the comics, much like Ultron is, and Vision is. And as a matter of fact, it's part of Vision's memories that are implanted into Simon Williams that make him Wonder Man, if I remember the storyline correct. Isn't that right?
Yeah, it was experiment gone wrong, I think. Something to that effect,
kind of like Luke Cage. Essentially, he inherits superpowers because it was experiment gone wrong.
Yeah, and Hulk for that matter, really.
Right, right. I mean, a lot of these characters are accidents, let's be honest.
Now, as far as the MCU in general, I jotted down a few things here. I kind of call it the 5-year catch, you know, or 5-year subplot. Some of the changes that were made here, obviously Tony having a daughter with Pepper, Black Widow being dead, though conceivably she may be alive up until essentially they go back. We officially got Falcon as the new Cap, and
it's not like if you even want to have him fight Red Skull, Red Skull's not back in the world. We know this now. We've seen him twice. There was a lot of speculation from people that I know. At the end of Infinity War, is Red Skull now released from his duties when Thanos got the Soul Stone on Vormir? And I said, I don't know. Well, when we went back in time, he was still there. And we know that, you know, Hawkeye got it. So that was in 2014, yet he was still there in 2018 when Thanos and Gamora showed up. So I get this feeling Red Skull might be stuck in that on Vormir. Am I wrong? You understand why I'm saying that?
Yeah, it's a reasonable assumption, because he pretty much said in Infinity War that he'd been there ever since, you know, ever since the effects of the first Avenger Captain America movie.
Now what I could say is this, you know, like I said, we don't know. You would wonder, well, if somebody gets the stone, he's released. Well, then he shouldn't have been there when Thanos showed up. But remember, Bruce made a deal to the Ancient One. When we're done doing what we're doing, we'll send the stones back. And that's what Cap did. And when he came back, he was old. So I don't understand, you know, the reality and how they all kind of work together. Maybe he was gone for a while and then it made him come back. I don't know. I just as a fan of the Red Skull and a person who's openly said many times they're really hurting for good villains in that world, I'm hoping that the Red Skull can make an appearance again. You're a Cap guy, so I'm sure you'd love to see the Red Skull come back in some capacity.
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the neat things about Red Skull, with his face being Red Skull, is you don't need the same actor. They don't need to get Hugo Weaving again. They can just...
Well, it hasn't been Hugo Weaving the last two times we've seen
right,
him.
Right, exactly, you know, right.
It's been, what is his name? The actor that plays Aaron on The Walking Dead. I can see his face, can't think of his name. He's a good actor, you know. Mm-hmm. And he does a pretty good job at trying to sound like Hugo Weaving as well. So kudos to him for that. I think with the Fox merger, Red Skull now is still in play. Loki is Loki. He could come back at any time, even though we didn't see it here. With Fox, meaning Dr. Doom is now their property. The future's looking bright for the possibility of some really good villains is what I'm thinking. Aren't you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. We talked about it when we had the episode on Disney finalizing with 20th Century Fox and such, that now they have right. access to characters like Doom and Kang that they didn't have before.
Right. And you add in, like I said, we know Red Skull's now back in play when we thought he wasn't. And Loki, well, he's Loki. Is he ever really dead?
I believe Ross Marquand. Is that the name you were looking for?
Ross Marquand. Thank you very much. I knew it was a French name. I just couldn't remember what his name was. I knew it was a French derivation. Thank you very much.
MDB Robin, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Thank you, Marvel Encyclopedia.
Right. So, yeah, you brought this up about future films and such. We know that there's that 5 years, and we talked about people coming, whether people were back or not. This does theoretically mean if they did trigger a reality where half the people didn't disappear or were brought back virtually instantaneously, that means conceivably, I'm not saying they will, I'm not saying I'd be disappointed if they don't do it, they could conceivably have more Avengers films with most of the same cast. That just right. takes place in that 5 year period that was right. triggered with everybody being brought back, you know?
Right. Right. Which I have to ask, I think the biggest shocker for everybody, at least was for me, that were you shocked? We were just talking about the Soul Stone and who was there and who wasn't. Are you shocked they killed off Black Widow?
I think she is the one that was probably lowest on the list of expected.
Especially in light of the fact that they've announced, and you know, quite proudly, that because it's been asked for years by the fans, that they're in the pre-production stages of doing a Black Widow standalone. That's where I was like, what?
Now, my understanding with the Black Widow movie, it's supposed to be an origin story. So we're probably going to get a couple different actresses, you know, for teenage and such, but they'll probably de-age Scarlet where necessary, if they even need to. I mean, she's only in her 30s, I think. So she could conceivably play a 20-something widow as well. And,
right.
you know, that would cover all the bases. Now, considering the current state of the MCU, do you think it's possible that we see Loki again in some capacity? Because they do have that out. You know, he ran off with a Tesseract when they went back to 2012 the second time, essentially, you know, when
right.
they actually got the Robert Redford cameo.
Well, they got it back. They got it back eventually. So who knows? It's Loki.
Right.
I mean, I think they definitely laid the foundation for future Asgardian tales with Thor kind of passing the mantle of running Asgard over to Valkyrie, to Tessa Thompson's character.
Mm-hmm.
I'm fine with that. They're following the comics totally because Ragnarok happened in the comics and Asgard was established on Earth just like it was in this movie. How many more Asgardian villains are left?
I can't think of too many.
They've killed off Surtur. They've killed off Malekith. They've killed off Hela. They've killed off. Well, they never really introduced Enchantress. I guess she's a possibility. You know,
right? And Executioner, I think that was Carl Urban's character, right?
The Carl Urban's character.
Mm-hmm. But I do think it's possible, since they did talk about the different timelines being created, that would probably be the out. If they're going to have Loki come back again in a future Thor or Asgardians of the Galaxy, and believe it or not, Asgardians of the Galaxy is actually a title being published right now by Marvel. That kind of goes along with the War of the Realms crossover story. Something else, while I'm mentioning War of the Realms, it was an Easter egg that I saw that jumped out at me because I talked about it in my review of the first two issues of War of the Realms. Thor dual wielding. He's got Mjolnir and a Stormbreaker at the same time. He's actually doing that in the comics as well. And I mean, it's Thor, right? He could have any amount of hammers and I think it would still be cool.
Oh yeah. I mean, he could have, you know, exactly. He could have as many hammers as Frank Castle has guns and I'd be happy with that.
Yeah.
I did like the fact that he was like, no, you get the small one to Cap. That was a funny scene too. Talking comedy.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I've always liked the look of Mjolnir. It looks like a Warhammer, you know. Period. So
yeah, it does. I got excited when Stormbringer came in. I got excited when we saw the Easter egg of Beta Ray Bill on Sakaar. I don't think we're ever going to get a Beta Ray Bill, but here's me keeping my fingers crossed.
If they are going to do Guardians 3 with Thor,
that is a possibility.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's very possible.
Yeah, yeah. Which reminds me, what happened to Korg? I guess he's still back on New Asgard on Earth then, right?
Right. I think what they had established with Valkyrie being the new leader or the new king or queen or whatever you want to call it, but that's probably just where he's living now. He's probably not sitting around getting drunk playing video games like Thor is. But he'll at least be happier.
True. So, you know, I think one of the things we talked about too was when we were talking about the final three being, you know, the final, you know, Thor, Cap, Iron Man, and how they were going to end it here and kind of set the stage for it to be Cap, T'Challa, Doctor Strange as the leaders, maybe Spidey a little bit too, you know, from here on out. Mm-hmm. They did do that. But they left those legacy, if you want to use that term, characters in play. I think that's where they're going with from here on out. I think we're going to see Tessa Thompson's character of Valkyrie become more important. There's a ton of untapped potential for T'Challa. You know,
right. He's got his own rogues gallery now, so they can definitely tap into
that. Well, they've killed half of them too. I'm shocked they killed Claw. I mean, heck, the director, Ryan Coogler, even said, dude, I love Claw. I hated killing him off. You know, I think there's a possibility to bring Claw back that would make him a little more in line with his comic book origins, you know, but who knows? Not only does Ryan Coogler said he likes the character of Claw, he likes Andy Serkis and working with him. So I don't think any of us would be upset if they brought Andy Serkis back and Claw back or Michael B. Jordan as Killmonger for that matter, you know. But yeah, You're right. There are still other characters that are villains of Black Panther. They haven't introduced. The Black Knight, who's a big villain for Black Panther. There are several others. You know, he's the one that's just coming to my mind right away. I'm the default Black Panther guy. So right. There have been multiple variations of Black Knight in the Marvel Universe. Some good guys, some bad guys. The Augustine Duloc version of the Black Knight, which was a villain version. He's a major rogues gallery member for Black Panther. They haven't brought him in yet, so he's a possibility. Strange, we know there's going to be another Strange movie. I don't know, and I think they kind of already set that one up with the post-credit scene there with Mordo going evil, which, once again, his two biggest baddies are always going to be Mordo and Dormammu, so no shock, right?
Right.
So, you know, it is what it is. What I'm more interested in as a Doctor Strange fan is you can't tell the story of Doctor Strange without Clea. I think they kind of had to have Night Nurse, which they did in the first Doctor Strange, but they kind of essentially gave him an out away from her. So I would not be shocked if in the future ones we introduce Clea to this world. Nothing against Night Nurse. She's just a really good human character that has no superpowers. If you're going to tell superhero stories, Clea's the better female character to have in that part of the universe. Cause, well, she's, you know, from the dark dimension and has magical powers too. So, I mean, it just makes more sense for her if you're going to, and I think we've all agreed that, you know, Doctor Strange is definitely, whenever he's involved in anything, it's high CGI, it's magic, you know, it's the mystical side of the universe. So,
right. One thing I was also very pleasantly surprised with, one is that they worked in the Kinks song Supersonic Rocket Ship. I'm always up for Kinks songs being used in movies. But the other thing, I think they kept this under wraps because I don't recall any photos that I had seen in any of the marketing and such. I really like, even if I'm the only person that thinks this, I really like that they finally have the Smart, or aka Professor Hulk, you know, the Hulk that is Hulk all the time, but with Banner's intelligence. Because what some casual fans may not realize is, at least in the last 30 years or so, that's actually been a much more common depiction of the Hulk than the Bruce Banner gets angry and turns into the Hulk. It was a psychological element. I think it was Doc Samson that helped him with it, but it was it was something similar to schizophrenia of sorts. They were two people or two individuals in the same brain. And Bruce just found a way to make that work where he could get them to coincide. And that's really all it is. And that's probably my favorite incarnation of the Hulk, quite frankly, is the Professor right. Hulk or Smart Hulk. So I would actually be very interested if he was to get his own movie. You know, I don't know how well it would do, but I'd watch right. it.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think the Russo brothers had kind of they, without spoiling it, said that don't be shocked if that happened. And I think we all speculated that was a possibility, too. Mm-hmm. I think the one thing that didn't happen that the fans would like, but the door's still open if they want to do another Hulk movie, because he's really the only standalone origin story movie that didn't get a sequel. I mean, there was, you know, they had Norton Hulk, and that was all we got, you know? Mm-hmm. And then we don't see him again until he's been recast as Mark Ruffalo in the first Avengers. Is the Gray Hulk, though. You know, you could do the Gray Hulk. You could even explain it away that the change in gray has to do with this merging of the two personalities, you know?
Right. Or maybe even a side effect of the gauntlet being used, because he even mentioned it by name that a lot of this is gamma radiation, and I'm like, by default, the expert on this.
Right, exactly. I did love the fact that in the scene where we first see the Hulk, and he's having a breakfast that would make even me put me to shame. Well, that huge like serving bowl full of eggs, and it looked like about three whole pigs worth of sausage, right. and a stack of breakfast burritos and crepes and pancakes. That he took selfies with the kids, because you know, our listeners know I'm a big fan of the Lego video games. That's a recurring side mission theme in all the Marvel Lego games, is taking selfies with Hulk. You know, so I thought, well, that's a cute little Easter egg. That it's a deep cut, but it's still an Easter egg, you know?
Right.
Well, I mean, we know Tony's dead. Do you see the possibility, if they'd like to keep the Iron Man franchise alive, at doing a rescue movie, or even his daughter Morgan becoming a Riri Williams type Ironheart? I mean, Rhodey's still alive, too.
Right. I think that might be a bigger possibility. I believe Gwyneth Paltrow had released a statement saying that she was done making Marvel movies now, whether it's because she just doesn't want to, or money, or whatever. But, you know, it would be hard to have Pepper in a storyline that does not involve Tony. Now, of course, in the comics, you know, Pepper actually winds up with Happy Hogan. I think they're the ones that get married. So they could go that route, I suppose.
Yeah, but it's from the trailers, it seems like they're going more towards the Happy winds up with Aunt May route. But I mean,
right.
Let's be honest. We know they cast Marissa Tomei because they didn't want her to be the octogenarian she is in the comics. It's much easier for her to have a love interest if she's Marissa Tomei's age, 40s, 50s, than it is if they made her like, you know, what she is in the comics. So who knows? It's a possibility. I do know that War Machine was scheduled at one time early on in all this to have his own standalone movie that was going to be a little bit darker and grittier, much like the War Machine character in the comics. Mm-hmm. And it got I don't know if it got completely canceled or just put way on the back burner. But that possibility is still out there. I think there are still stories to be told about Rhodey, personally.
Right.
I wouldn't even mind because he does seem to have bonded somewhat with Bucky and Sam over the whole Civil War Sokovia Accords deal. I could see a team up movie with those three characters, couldn't you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know, Sam as the new Captain America, Bucky as still the Winter Soldier, but or you call him White Wolf, even like T'Challa's been calling him, you know? Mm-hmm. And, you know, a Don Cheadle War Machine. The only issue I think you run into with that is with Tony gone, then they could easily develop this that Morgan inherited this from her father and her grandfather. There's nobody else now that can create that type of technology, you know, because Tony's gone. But, you know, me being wishful thinker, Reed Richards is now yours. There you go.
Yeah, probably the best mind to do it outside of Tony, really.
Or Hank. And Hank's still alive in this world, you know. And I do think that at some point, Michael Douglas, obviously he's no spring chicken. I'm not hoping the man dies. I think he's a great actor. It makes sense to kill the Hank Pym character off at some point, you know. If nothing else, for the emotional gut punch it'll give us, and to let make Scott have to stand alone. And it's obvious that Hope understands her father's technology. So if you kill off Hank, you're not killing off Pym particles. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Whereas as of right now, Stark type technology doesn't exist in Marvel Universe anymore, cinematic universe anymore, unless Morgan grows up to be smart like her dad, which is an easy out for the filmmakers if they want to go that route, because I think everybody would buy it. Oh, well, she's Tony's kid. Of course she's as smart as he is, because Tony was as smart as his dad, you know, so.
Mm-hmm. The one thing you had said about Back to the Future, because I was trying to mull this over with fan theories on Cap, they said that it doesn't work like Back to the Future, but when they send Cap back and then they see him sitting on the bench at, you know, 100 years old or however old he's supposed to be, it makes sense that the super soldier serum would slow his aging, but that's kind of like the type of thing that might have happened in Back to the Future had they done something like that. So I don't want to say they're like wrong or hypocritical or lazy or anything like that. I'm not sure if that was something that they put too much thought or detail in. And there was the fan theory out there. I can't claim originality on this, but you notice in the talk in Winter Soldier where, you know, Steve's going to that museum and there's all the stuff dedicated to Captain America, and Peggy said that her husband was one of the people that Cap saved that day in the original Captain America. Here's a fan theory which I think might hold up, and that's that Peggy did indeed hook up with Steve later, or you know, post World War II or something to that effect, and they did get married, because she only refers to her husband as her husband. I don't think he's actually depicted on screen at all. I mean, he had a romance with one of the guys in Agent Carter, but I think it is possible, or theoretically possible, that they did get married. They had that secret life together because she knew that and Cap knew, quite frankly, that he could not go public. So,
right.
They keep it under wraps, and that could also be why she reacts the way she did at 90-something in Winter Soldier, because clearly she had a measure of dementia. So to her, you know, a young Steve walking in is probably perfectly normal to her.
Sure. And also remember, Peggy, especially if you go back and watch the Agent Carter television series that was sadly only two seasons long, Peggy has seen all kinds of crazy, unexplainable crap in her long life.
Right. You know, right. So she'd have no problem believing a time travel story.
Yeah. She's going to be nonplussed about it. I mean, if you understand the whole second season with Dark Matter, you know, Agent Carter with Leviathan being the bad guy group, Peggy's like, it's walking apart.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah, no big deal. No big deal. We've talked about Peggy's aging and the de-aging of Michael Douglas. What did you think of the aging they did on Chris Evans at the end?
I thought it was excellent. You know, at first I was thinking maybe it was makeup, but, you know, like you just said, they've been using technology to make people younger. It only makes sense that they would have the technology to make people look older. And to me, it was more than just the effects. Chris Evans did a very good job of playing an old man, the way he mm-hmm. kind of hunched his shoulders a little bit, and the way his mouth would move when he talks, and, you know, it's possible the teeth are fake or something to that effect, you know, right. So, you know, definitely kudos to Chris Evans for that. And, you know,
I'm much like you. It isn't just the makeup or the CGI. I thought the costuming was perfect, because that's kind of how old guys nowadays dress, you know, right. With the windbreaker and the butt. I'm like, yeah, that looks like every old guy that's walking around the mall at 10 o'clock in the morning on Saturday, you know?
Right.
I just thought that was very well. And it's like, I guess once you're that old, even the inkling of trying to look cool, just you don't care anymore. It's like,
right.
And I think it's, I do will say this. I've never been a huge Captain America fan. I think that these movies, and Chris Evans' portrayal of the character have gone a long way at making Captain America kind of cool.
Right.
And I think they've been very true to who the character is, in the comics, but with bringing some more dimension to him. I stepped away from Cap a long time ago and just never revisited him. So maybe some of my changing of my views on Cap is not only the MCU, just me getting older and a little more, you know, your opinions change as you experience things in life, obviously.
Right.
But of all the things I take out of the MCU at this point, that's one of the biggest things I take out, is that they kind of made Captain America cool. And let's be honest, Captain America probably doesn't even exist in modern times if Stan Lee wasn't such a big fan and brought him back in the 60s to begin with. Am I wrong?
No, I think you're absolutely right. So, Trane, I couldn't help but notice, who was it that was standing with Bucky at Tony's funeral? Was that Wanda, Scarlet Witch?
Yes.
Oh, okay. No, okay. Yeah, because at first I was like, this is new.
You know? Well, here's one that I was alluded to in social media beforehand. Okay, you know how when they start panning back and showing each little group, individual group at Tony's funeral, right?
Right, right.
And you notice like General Ross is standing by himself, and then, you know, Maria's kind of by herself. There's a teenage boy standing by himself, and then Nick walks in, Fury. Mm-hmm. The teenage boy is the boy from Iron Man 3.
Ah, okay, I see it now.
That's the boy. And it would make sense. There was an emotional bond there, why he would be at Tony's funeral, you know?
Right.
It makes sense he would be there. They didn't really do a good job explaining that. And so, you know.
Mm-hmm. What did you think of the time travel with everybody going to their respective locales? Almost kind of a Back to the Future 2 type of story. You know, to explain anybody that might not be a Back to the Future fan. The bulk of the story in the second Back to the Future is going back again to the 1950s.
Right.
And essentially they're walking around doing stuff in the background in some of the classic scenes in the first Back to the Future. So you know, there actually is a scene of Marty climbing across scaffolding while younger Marty is playing Johnny
playing
Good.
Yeah. I thought that was kind of cool. You know, it explains all this stuff that leaked about a year ago where they were building old sets. You know, there was like the rumor leak. They were building a set that was the Camp Leonard or wherever Cap was training in the first Avenger. And everybody's thinking, oh, they're going to go all the way back to the 40s. No, they just went back to the same base in the 1970s, you know, in 1970, where they get more PIM particles and they get the Tesseract back, you know. So
and they clearly did film some extra stuff with Chris Evans in the original costume, because that was some of the fan speculation.
And it looks like to me, obviously they filmed some extra scenes with Rene Russo and extra dialogue for her as Frigga, because she has that nice little scene with Thor, you know, when she tells him to eat a salad, because even mom's noticed that you've put a pot belly on. I will say this. We just talked a little while ago about how we were kind of taken, you know, from left field that Black Widow died. But I knew as soon as I'm just process of elimination. We know all these, they go out in three teams to get the stones in the past, and we see where everybody is. And I knew that Clint and Natty had gone into the space, because they were the only two that had never been into space before. And Rocket told them not to throw up on his ship, which was also a funny scene. Like they just through process of elimination. I'm going, oh crap. Vormir's the only place they haven't gone. They're sending the two of them to get the soul stone. And before they even show that, I was like in the back of my mind going, one of them's going to die, you know?
Yeah, I did too.
When I started doing the process of elimination of what stones left, the soul stone, who hasn't gone, who haven't we seen on screen yet go to get their assigned stone, I was like, and I really thought, based on the comics, that they were going to kill Hawkeye off, because Hawkeye has died in the comics and been resurrected.
What do we keep saying about comic book deaths, you know?
right. Remember, Tony Stark's died in the comics too.
Yeah.
And Cap, and Thor.
Mm-hmm. And Loki, how many times? I lost count. I think Loki's been killed more times than Kenny from South Park.
Yeah, and Hank Pym. And Natty's just one of the few that hasn't died, okay?
So good was point.
Because I'm sitting here going, well, Clint's died. Tony, in the comics, Clint's died. Tony died. Steve's died. Thor's died. Bruce Banner's died. Hank Pym's died. I mean, I'm going through the list going, okay. But so that one's a shocker to me. I just knew through process of elimination, and I was sitting there before they even showed the little, you know, screen saying Vormir and the year. I'm like, one of them's going to die. One of them's going to have to sacrifice themselves to get the stone. And I was really thinking, oh, Hawkeye's going to die. Natty will figure a way to trick him and kill him, you know? But I think this is not a rag on any of the cast members. Okay. I just think other than RDJ, and maybe Samuel L. I don't think there's anybody else in this cast that is in demand for the diversity of roles that Scarlett Johansson is. Am I wrong in saying that, you think?
She can play anything. You know, she's done comedy, she's done drama, she's done action.
She's done period pieces, she's done sci-fi. Yeah, she can do it all. Maybe Brie Larson, because she's so young, or Tom Hiddleston. But if Scarlett decides this is the time to step away, I understand why. Because I just think I just think in my gut, she has more potential to do more things than just about anybody else. And that's, like I said, that is not a knock on anybody in the cast. I think you know, just from the trailers alone that I saw before the movie, Benedict Wong was in one of them, and it's not a Marvel movie. And, you know, there was a couple other people that I've seen in MCU, major MCU characters, their actors are in other projects, you know, so it's not like they're all hurting. Right. I might even dare say when they first cast this whole thing, Edward Norton was a big time, you know, favorite of Hollywood, but then he got out of it really quick. Mm-hmm. RDJ was definitely a guy on the comeback. We've talked about that at length before. He was an A-list actor, Oscar nominated for Chaplin, but then through his own demons had kind of fallen out of the graces of the Hollywood elites. So Samuel L. was probably the biggest name, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And Scarlett Johansson was probably number two right behind him in the early days, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I remember plain as day when the movies were announced in 2005 or 2006, whenever it was, that Robert Downey Jr. had to lobby for the role. He went to Marvel for the role. They were originally going to go out and find a cast because the concern was that Robert was too old at the time. Now, he was only 40, 41, and he's approaching his mid-50s now, but...
With all the drugs he had done in his past, you ages you quick.
Right. So I was one of those people, I've said it before, that, you know, okay, bipolar alcoholic actor playing bipolar alcoholic superhero, this, you know, this will work.
Right. I mean, because the little known fact, I think you know this, the original plan for the first Iron Man, and we gotta remember, it seems weird now, 11 years later, but taking the chance on a action-packed comic book based movie like this was a big deal 11 years ago when the first Iron Man came in. They didn't know if it was going to work. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, they did a good job because obviously, you know, they got Gwyneth Paltrow, they got RDJ, they got Jeff Daniels to play Obadiah. They got good actors, you know, Terrence mm-hmm. Howard to play Rhodey. It was a risk. They originally wanted it to be Tom Cruise, and just quite frankly, they didn't have the money at the time to pay Tom what his asking price was.
Yeah, I can attest to that because I was reading, I think it was Entertainment Weekly's. I can't remember if it was in Wizard as well, but Tom Cruise was attached to an Iron Man movie for years, quite frankly. I think since the 90s.
And quite frankly, Tom was down to do it. You know, I like Tom Hanks. Think he does. I think even though he's a completely bat nuts crazy in his real life, I think he would have been good in the role. I don't think he would have brought to what RDJ did. But I think the action stuff we would have got. The other one that intrigues me, who was probably the other big name actor that people have heard of that was linked to that role before RDJ got it, was Timothy Oliphant.
Mm-hmm.
And as Timothy's openly admitted, the reason he didn't get cast, he thinks, is his reading for the role was exactly one day after RDJ had read for the role. So it's just kind of screwed. And once again, I think Oliphant would have been good in the role, too. He would have brought something different. I mean, they got it right. And some of that was luck, you know, and taking a chance. But so, you know, it is what it is. Right. I mean, Oliphant, you know, he's had some decent stuff after that. We know Tom Cruise is doing fine. So everybody seems to be happily working actors in Hollywood still. Right. So I don't think anybody's hurting. But
And speaking of cameos, one of the cameos that got me out of left field, I had to think about it at first, was, of course, I forget the actor who was playing the bald agent who was actually Hydra, but he, you know, I think...
The Jasper Sitwell character.
Yes, I think he was killed in Winter Soldier, I want to say, and I think he even appeared on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. a time or two.
He did.
But, yeah, we also got the couple minutes, really, 2-3 minutes at most, of George St. Pierre again. You know, he was playing Batroc, the Leaper, who's like probably the most known B villain or C grade villain that Cap's had to deal with. And the other thing that was pretty awesome, considering their stature, I mean, first off, Robert Redford in Winter Soldier, I thought was great. That's the first time I ever recall Robert Redford being a heel. But, mm-hmm. you know, them to get him in such a brief but memorable cameo, if you've seen Winter Soldier, you know what that was leading to. So I thought it was pretty amazing. They pulled out just about any stop you could think of to get anybody who's been in an MCU movie at some point a cameo in this wrap-up.
And that kind of got leaked when Frank Grillo kind of leaked out, I think about 6 months ago, just finished wrapping my scenes for Endgame. And somebody's like, isn't Crossbones dead? but it was a pre-Crossbones Frank Grillo. It was, which I also thought nice Easter egg when Cap whispers in his ear, "Hail Hydra," which of course was an Easter egg to the very controversial comic book storyline a couple years ago, where Cap was being mind controlled by Red Skull to be a Hydra agent. You know, they're but we've come to expect Easter eggs in these movies, haven't we? So,
Oh yeah.
Am I the only one who's thinking that Quicksilver made the ultimate sacrifice at the end of Age of Ultron, and like he has never been mentioned ever again, even in passing by his sister in this entire run? It's been how many movies since that happened? I'm like, really?
Right.
Poor Pietro. Nobody loves Pietro. And he killed him. He died. He sacrificed himself to save a little boy, little girl, and Clint. And nobody's talked about him. Not even his sister. Wow. Thanks for showing up.
Right. And they also did the cameos in 1970. I'm assuming that was the same actor that had been Howard Stark in Civil
John
War
Slattery.
And such. Okay, yeah. And
from Mad Men fame. Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess they did the de-aging on him as well. And, you know, the bushy-haired Michael Douglas. I think we mentioned it before.
Mm-hmm.
But I liked the young Howard scene because, especially if you remember Civil War,
right,
the fact that Tony never got to make amends with his dad before the death. It was like that Mike and the Mechanic song in the 80s, "The Living Years," you know?
Yeah, "Your Living Years," yeah.
Yeah. Cat, which is a great song,
cats,
by the way.
Little Cats in the Cradle, Cat Stevens, right. You know, can feel to it, doesn't it? And it's just great to look on his face like, okay, thanks for hugging me since we just met.
Right.
Speaking of, like you said, with Robert Redford, and then the de-aging with Michael Douglas made me think about this. Michael Douglas is another actor I've always thought was, you know, he's almost at that Robert Redford type level. You know, he's like real Hollywood royalty type, long-standing A-lister. He's even admitted when he got cast into this world, he had never seen any of the movies. And they told him when they were filming the first Ant-Man, you need to go back and watch some of these so you can understand what's going on here. And he did, you know. I have to give kudos to him. Not that I'm disrespecting Robert Redford. Robert Redford really only had the one cameo here and the great heel turn in Winter Soldier. Michael Douglas is fully ensconced in this world now. He is Hank Pym. And he is a big-time, long-running A-lister who's embraced it. You know, he hasn't tried to run from it.
He's openly expressed interest, I think, in returning to the role in a flashback capacity or doing something that takes place. Because
right.
Obviously, I'm sure they could use stand-ins for action scenes and such. But, you know, he had said that, wow, I could make movies and be young again. You know, that just sounds like fun.
Right. I mean, who doesn't want to see a Sam Gecko aged Michael Douglas, you know?
Right.
I don't ever think Hank will say greed is good, but I do. But that look, that time period, you know, that mid to late 80s Michael Douglas, which we know he's active in. We saw the flashback scene where Janet disappeared into the quantum realm, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So it's there. It's a potential if they want to do it. Even if they don't make a whole movie out of it, if they just make it another flashback in another one of these standalone movies, I'm fine with that. Of course, everybody knows I'm a Kurt Russell fan, so I did weep little bit when they killed Ego off. But we go back to what we said earlier. It's comic book character. Is Ego really dead? I mean, and I do think we know that we do know for a fact. They said the Celestials are coming in this world. We've speculated before about where do you go from here, even before this movie came out. The Celestials are another possibility for bad guys, I think, in the future, especially with Guardians, don't you?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think technically Thanos is a Celestial. He's just an evil one.
Oh, I thought he was a Titan.
Well, maybe that's under the same, yeah.
I'm not the Marvel guy, but I know there's Celestials and Eternals. And Eternals are like the Collector, Grandmaster, which we know who they are. That's Goldblum and Benicio del Toro. And I can't remember for the life of me. I'd have to go back and watch it. I can't remember what Ego tells Quill and the Guardians he is. Is he a Celestial? Is he an Eternal? I don't know what he says he is. But he's one of those ancient races. And I know you're still hoping for Galactus, and I think he'll show up at some point.
I would be surprised if he doesn't. I want Doom. I want Kang.
And for God's sakes, if you do give us Galactus, don't make him an amorphous, faceless
cloud.
Cloud give him make him personified. Okay, I mean, you've shown what you can do with the de-aging and the aging. We've just been talking about that for 10 minutes. Please. I don't know who you cast to play him. It has to be somebody who can really pull off that kind of heavy role. you know. I would say Mads Mikkelsen, but oops, sorry, he's already been Caecilius in this. And right. Then again, there's also the possibility, we know that like Benedict played both Dormammu and Strange. He just did the mocap for Dormammu. They could go that route too with if they wanted. Don't you think for Galactus, do a mocap kind of Dormammu oh, yeah. type look?
Yeah, and I guess that brings us to the last point here, you know, as far as the MCU and what they could do for the future, because I don't think they have too many movies announced by name other than, you know, there's going to be a Doctor Strange 2, there's going to be a Captain Marvel 2.
Guardians 3.
Yeah, which will probably have Thor, yeah.
We know Spider-Man, there's already trailers out for it, Far From Home.
Right.
And Black Panther 2. I think those are the only ones that are announced, aren't they?
I think by name, yeah. I've seen dates, and I'll put the links in the show notes at geekvilleradio.com/endgame. If you're listening to this and want to see the show notes that we talk about in written form, just go to geekvilleradio.com/endgame, and that'll be the notes for this show. And since they have the Asgardians of the Galaxy reference, you know, Guardians 3 may just very well have Thor in a supporting role.
Well, like I said earlier, I do think we're going to see another Thor movie. It's just not going to be Thor. It's going to be Asgard, and you're going to see Valkyrie. I wouldn't even be shocked if they called it Valkyrie. Give her her own standalone, you know?
Yeah, that's actually a pretty cool idea.
Right. The one that I'm still questioning is, what do you do with Iron Man? Do you have a rescue War Machine movie? It's possible.
Right.
Are there any characters they have not introduced that we've heard about them introducing?
Not that anybody confirmed. I know we said before we'd love to see Beta Ray Bill, and maybe we'll get him, but, you know.
I still go with the idea when we talked about the merger. I think from here on out, you're going to take what's already established, who survived this movie, integrate them in with the recasting of the X-Men and the Fantastic Four, and that's where we're going. That's what I think.
We could have a possibly even larger ensemble cast for Avengers 6. You know, they'll probably have one that maybe they introduce the X-Men in or something to that effect, because it's going to take right. time to make those X-Men movies.
As a matter of fact, I even think that's an interesting dynamic, because up to this point, everything that we've had has either been a cosmic entity, magically based, or a scientific accident or technology. The mutants bring something new to this. These are empowered individuals that were born with their powers. They're inherently part of who they are. And that's completely different than anything we've had so far in the MCU. So there's a wealth of stories to tap into, and their interplay with these. I mean, you know, take Hank McCoy, you know, intermingling with Bruce Banner. Similar skill sets, but one is born with that skill set because he's a mutant. The other is a scientific act, you know. You see my point. The possibility for telling stories there. I don't know. You name any X-Men, and you can find somebody that could have an interesting interplay with them and already established MCU characters that survived Endgame, you know?
Right, makes sense.
I hate Natty's dead, because I'd love to see interplay between her and Nightcrawler. I think that would be interesting, you know? Nightcrawler would actually also be interesting with Daredevil, but they still won't bring the Netflix people in, doggone it.
Yeah. Oh, man, maybe we can still hope. And speaking of the Netflix series, mm-hmm. I'm going to be picking up a lot of the books that are the tie-ins to War of the Realms. As I've said before,
right.
this concept is just too cool not to do in a movie. I can't remember if you saw this. I think I texted you about it when I saw it. I put the picture up at the Geekville Radio Facebook. Our, you know, Twitter is, of course, Geekville Radio, and Facebook, Geekville Radio. There's going to be a limited series called Strike Force. And sadly, it's not going to have Rick Martel or Tito Santana in it. But It was hinted at in Endgame. They used a term, Strike Force, and what this is, I think they're going to battle frost giants, because the backdrop is a very icy mountain, and Cap is the leader. There's Spider-Man, Luke Cage, and Iron Fist. Now, I don't know why the hell Iron Fist and Spider-Man are carrying swords, but maybe they're enchanted or something like that. But the most interesting thing, and I kind of putting you on the spot a little bit here, I don't mm-hmm. think this would surprise you. I think it's something we both like. It shows Luke Cage wielding what looks like Mjolnir, or an Asgardian-type hammer. I think we probably both agree that...
Looks worthy.
Goes back to babyface analogy, the white meat babyface. As soon as you see Luke Cage walk out in Jessica Jones, even if you had no idea who the character was, you're like, this is the good guy. You know,
right? Well, I mean, if you go, heck, you could even look it up on YouTube, ladies and gentlemen. There are multiple lists out there of other comic book characters that have been worthy to wield Mjolnir. And for the record, yes, Steve Rogers in the comics has wielded Mjolnir in the past. So this is they're going to the source material there. Most of the ones I think of, though, are from the DC Marvel crossovers, because I know like Bruce and Kal-El and Diana have all, but those are DC characters, you know?
Right.
And quite frankly, all three of them would be worthy to wield Mjolnir, too. I don't think I'd get any argument from anybody who's a comic book fan on that.
No, not at all.
But Luke Cage fits right in that wheelhouse to me. He's the kind of guy that could, yeah, he's worthy.
Yeah. We agree on that. Anything else you wanted to talk about before we wrap up here?
No, I'm just kind of it's I love the movie. I suggest anybody go see it. I think it's I didn't like it as much as I liked Infinity War, but I think it's a very I can't even think of the word fulfilling ending.
Yeah. There's literally nothing in the movie, at least in my opinion, that was like, oh, well, that's a downer. You know, everything they planted, every seed that was planted was essentially harvested in this. And I'm one of those guys, when you have a movie on a grand scale that is supposed to be hard-hitting and supposed to put the heroes through the grinder and supposed to be dramatic, you know, I actually kind of like it. It sounds morbid to say that, but when the victory comes at a cost, and this victory came at the cost of Tony Stark, Iron Man. So, you know, that is a perfectly good, emotional, you know, sad but yet happy ending. And, you know, one of the major players has probably played the part for the final time. I can't say we'll never see Downey again in the Tony Stark role, but I don't think it's in the cards right now. I don't think there's anything specific planned for him.
No, I don't either. And we knew that both he and Chris Evans' contracts were winding up with this movie. And I think Scarlett Johansson's, for that matter. Well, it kind of makes sense with how they did the movie.
Right.
I concur with what you say. All the seeds that were planted, they were able to be sowed. They left themselves enough wiggle room that there's places to go forward from here. It's going to be interesting because remember, folks, we've been on this hype train for what, 11 years and 23 movies now. and none of them have been a letdown. We can talk about Dark World. We can talk about Iron Man 2 being lesser than the others, but they still were not bad movies by any stretch of the imagination. They've all been good to great movies. I'll be interested to see if they can keep the momentum going up now that their vision that was laid out 11 years ago has come to fruition. I think they'll be fine. I don't think the merger with or deal with Fox could have come at a better time. It's absolutely perfect now. Now you have lots more interesting characters to cast and to tell stories and to intermingle. And just when it looks like you might be out of steam, well, there's a whole lot of new blood right there. So,
all right. Well, that's going to bring us to the end of this special edition of Geekville Radio reviewing Avengers Endgame. And I know we spoiled a lot, but there's stuff that happens in the movie. If for whatever reason you haven't seen the movie yet, there's still going to be stuff you're going to like that we didn't talk about. And hopefully if you did watch it and maybe might have been confused on a few things, I hope we cleared that up for you. Now, there's something I'm going to announce here, Train. I don't think I told you about this, so my apologies for not cluing you in. But,
so, ladies and gentlemen, I'm in on this with y'all, okay?
right. Obviously, the Facebook and Twitter are at Geekville Radio, and the website is Geekville Radio. We do have a comment section here on the website, geekvilleradio.com, but we now have a go-to email address. Just email show@geekvilleradio.com if you want to drop us a line about anything. We'll sure be happy to talk about it. I've been meaning to have that email going for a while now and just haven't. And it's my own fault, but I am very happy to announce that we can do that. It's definitely a way to get a hold of us. And if you do email us, I will definitely make sure to email back and answer whatever questions you have. But like I said, you can still post on social media, still post on the board and all that stuff. So, Train, if anybody wants to talk to you about Endgame or anything else, you're at the usual spot.
Yep, @crazytrain_JB. I welcome any thoughts. If I've offended anybody with my being upset over there being a group shot of all the girls, please let me know. But I will remind you, I knew all those characters were awesome for 25, 30 years. So where are you? Welcome to the party.
So with all that said and done, I'm shutting out the lights here in the Geekville Radio studios. We'll talk to you folks again next week with news and views and whatever else crosses our mind. This is Geekville Radio. We'll talk to you folks later. Geekville Radio is not sponsored or endorsed by any products or services unless specifically stated. The views expressed by the hosts and or guests do not reflect the views of GeekvilleRadio.com, the Wrestling Brethren podcast, family, or any of their affiliates. Some media used in Geekville Radio is the product of their respective copyright holders, all rights reserved.
Okay, so we speculated about where they go. I know this is just me fanboying here. There still looks like there's never going to be a Moon Knight, though, right?
Oh, well, we can only hope.
Oh, well.
You know something else about Cap? He cussed twice in this movie.
Language.
Yeah.